So China and Thomas, I haven't seen you guys in a bazillion, quadrillion years. I'm so excited.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Thomas.
It's great to see you. I think I last saw you actually on the streets of Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
You came to visit Melissa, what was her name?
Melissa Rossi,
that's
reporter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys are based in Portland, but how much time do you spend on the road now?
About 150 days out of the year.
Sort
of,
gosh.
You know, which is actually not that much considering that most people work 250 days out of the year. So if you think about it from that sort of standpoint, plus there's the additional bonus of being able to sort of travel and get applause every night, which most people don't necessarily get.
You guys have sold millions of records now. What does that feel like?
We kind of don't know. We're really pathetic at keeping up with our SoundScan scores. We kind of go back to Portland and get lost in our small Mayberry lives and lose touch with what's going on in Europe. And I actually have no idea how many albums we've sold.
I don't really know either. It's not really quite millions yet, I don't think.
You're over a million at least.
We are?
Yeah. All three albums combined.
All together.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a shame that I know more about... No,
I
just
know. It's embarrassing.
I'm just yanking your chain. But it's... tell me, Thomas, how you got started with Pink Martini.
Well, I was working actually... I was from Portland, Oregon. Grew up there. And went into politics. I thought I was going to actually try to become mayor of Portland. And in 1994, there was a terrible... attempt on the part of a very conservative organization called the Oregon Citizens Alliance to illegalize homosexuality in the state of Oregon. So I was working on this campaign in opposition, and I had just seen Pee Wee Herman's Christmas special, which is an unbelievable, it's the special to end all specials. In 45 minutes, you've got Grace Jones, Katie Lang, Little Richard, Charo, and you also have the Del Rubio triplets, three gals, three guitars, somewhere between the ages of 70 and 80, wearing miniskirts, singing covers of Walk Like an Egyptian and Whip It. And so I had the idea of bringing the Del Rubio triplets to town, to Portland, to do a series of concerts in nursing homes and hospitals and retirement homes, and then sneaking in a No on 13 message at the end. And at the end of that week, we had a big public concert, and I really needed an opening act. And so I threw on a cocktail dress, and that was the beginning of Pink Martini. It was supposed to be just a one-time thing, and it seemed to be so popular, so we kind of became the house band for political progressive parties. So we did benefits for the environment, libraries, public broadcasting, affordable housing, civil rights. And that's how the band sort of got its start.
I have to just say, you and your cocktail dresses, I remember in college you used to throw those breakfast at Tiffany's parties.
Yum.
You were so awesome. You always looked great. And China, when did you intersect with all this?
Well, I was just oblivious to the whole Pink Martini thing. I was living in New York, trying to be an actress, having a little singer-songwriter project of my own. And Thomas, who I hadn't spoken to since graduation, called me via my friend Evgenia. He got my number from her, and she was pissed because he was like, "Evgenia, where can I reach China?" He didn't even say hello to her. And then he called me, and he was like, "It's Thomas. I started a band. I'm in Portland. I need you to fly here this weekend and do four concerts in 3 days. I'm sending you the material, and you're going to fly on Friday." And I could do it because, of course, I was an actress, so I had no work. And I flew out to Portland, and Thomas and his blue-haired boyfriend picked me up at the airport and put me up in his apartment where there were no towels and I had to dry off with his T-shirt. And I said I loved the band, and I would come back if I could stay in a hotel next time. And then it just began, and I commuted for 3 years, and eventually I moved from New York to Portland.
Over the years, you have gone on to do three albums, a ton of work for movies and TV. Your work has been sampled in commercials as well, becoming more orchestral in terms of your performances. What drives you now to keep going, China?
I think at this point it's kind of this wide open, unexpected, huge palette where we don't know what we're going to do next, which is kind of exciting because in the past we had written a lot of songs and we thought, oh, we'll put those on the third album. Now we actually have no songs and we're starting from scratch, which is really cool, and we kind of have a sense of the kind of album we want to make. So we're going to write more for that kind of album as opposed to just drawing from the repertoire we've created over the years. So I think it's kind of a new chapter for Pink Martini.
And tell me about the songwriting that you did for Hey Eugene. How do you write?
The writing, it's really, there's no formula. I mean, sometimes Thomas will have a melody that he's working on and we'll get together and I'll join in, or I'll start a melody or lyrics and we'll both bring a fragment to each other. And I think those really work well. Sometimes, like the song Hey Eugene, I wrote actually before I was in Pink Martini, and it's just this very, I realized recently it's very Suzanne Vega influenced, who is someone I listened to a lot in high school. It's the way the story unfolds. It's much different from all the other Pink Martini music, but we sort of snuck it in on the third album and then named the album after it, which is funny.
Thomas, you guys are playing the Hollywood Bowl, enormous, dramatic outdoor venue in Los Angeles. And so few people can play even one night there. And you guys are playing night after night with fireworks. Tell me about, I mean.
I think the Hollywood Bowl is the most beautiful place to play in the entire world. I can't, you know, I mean, we play everywhere from Oregon farm country to Omaha to Istanbul and Paris and New York. And of all of the places that we've ever played, the Hollywood Bowl is really the most breathtaking. I mean, it's 18,000 people every night. And this will be our fourth time at the Bowl. And the music itself is, I think, is really lends itself well to collaboration with symphony orchestra. In fact, that's how we've largely toured in the United States, and that's how we sort of eked out a career early on, was by playing with symphony orchestras. And so to play with the Los Angeles Philharmonic or the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra, the music itself is really has this sort of like romantic sweep and sort of a 1940s, 1960s sort of like Hollywood classic vibe crossed with a world multilingual repertoire. And so I think that the band really does well with orchestra, and especially in a place like Los Angeles, which is all about sort of cinema and these sort of beautiful songs. I think it's the most staggeringly beautiful place to play. This time we're actually bringing we have some special guests, Carol Channing, who we worked with last New Year's Eve. She's unbelievable. She and China are going to do a fantastic duet of "There's No Business Like Show Business," and our other guest is Henri Salvador, who hasn't played in the United States since the '60s. He's really considered to be kind of the French equivalent of Nat King Cole, and we recorded a song by him for this third album, Syracuse, and we've always wanted to work with him, and actually randomly met him in the street of Paris last March and asked him if he would consider coming, and here he is.
You mentioned the multilingual nature of the work that you do, and you do so beautifully. Both of you come from multicultural families, and Thomas, you've got, you know, African-American brothers, Iranian brother. Your mother, China, is one of the foremost African-American women in the equities business, a really formidable woman.
Yeah, she is.
How did your intercultural backgrounds affect this music, if at all?
Well, I think both of us grew up studying different languages and both being aware of sort of a world beyond white America, and having a black brother, black sister, and an Iranian brother, and being mystery Asian myself, and studying different languages and also studying music of different countries, growing up studying classical piano especially, and then also being obsessed with world cinema. I think that all of those forces have colluded. And so in many ways, I feel like the band is kind of a cross between like a Hollywood musical and the United Nations.
What about you? I mean, you've got a really talented sister as well.
Yeah, my sister's a writer here in Los Angeles, and she's hilarious. She's a comedy writer. We had a very unusual childhood. I think that everything that happened to us really made us into creative people who needed to write, probably to process what was going on with our parents getting divorced and you know, just many different crazy factors. But I think just having exposure to my Black family and my white family and, like, the French side of my father's family. So I studied French from a pretty early age, and I was always drawn to foreign languages, and I listened to a broad range of music. So when Thomas asked me to become part of Pink Martini, it was sort of something I hadn't been aware of, that I'd never would have created that for myself, but it was a perfect fit for every piece of my puzzle, probably.
Why don't you guys each give me a story about something that happened while performing, whether it's a connection with an audience member or a breakthrough of your own, something that you'll always remember, China?
Other than the times where I put my foot in my mouth,
that moments counts
on stage
too.
Where I can never forget. Let's see. Well, it's really simple things. I mean, we often sign CDs after our concerts, and it's a chance for us to meet our audience. And an older woman came up to us in the spring and said that the song we had written called Everywhere, which is on our new album, was a perfect song to play at her 50th wedding anniversary, which was coming up. And it just was so satisfying to know that someone would want that song for such a huge event in their life, you know. And I think people often want to play our CDs at their weddings and just for really happy occasions, which makes me really happy. Do you have anything that you remember, Thomas? There was a girl who wanted to marry you.
Oh, right, in San Antonio.
Oh, boy.
She was trembling when she met him. And she doesn't understand that he's not interested in girls. So she still follows us around.
Hopefully not in that stalker way.
I don't know.
So, Thomas, what's your favorite song of your own? I mean, I know that's probably unfair, but, you know, pick one of your songs that you love the most.
Geez, that's really hard. I mean, I'm a classical pianist, and so, like, the concept of writing a song was never really anything that I've ever, it's never really been that much of an urge inside. I guess, I would say that one song that I'm really happiest with is maybe a song called Hang On Little Tomato.
Which is the title of?
Of the second album. And it was largely inspired by an advertisement for Hunt's Ketchup from a 1964 issue of Life magazine. And the original ad said, hang on, little tomato, stay on the vine till you're fat and juicy. Then we will pluck you and boil you in secret bubbling spices, turn you into ketchup, and if you're lucky, some smart hamburger may team up with you. And so we turned that – it's sort of like it's the simultaneity of uplifting – sort of encouragement and also sinisterness. And so we turned it into a song called Hang On Little Tomato.
China, do you have one?
I think probably the first song Thomas and I wrote together, which is called Sympathique or Je ne veux pas travailler, because it's people around the world can relate to it. It's, as someone referred to it, it's the slacker anthem for people who don't want to work. And in France, you know, we wrote it in French, and my accent on the first album is pretty abysmal when I listen to the recording. It's gotten a lot better since then. But when I go to France and I perform that song, people in France have basically embraced it as their own, which is the biggest compliment. And I just, like, I can feel the excitement in the audience whenever that song begins. So I love performing it live.
Well, Thomas and China, it's really great to reconnect with you again. And enjoy that really hectic tour schedule.
Thanks.
Thank you.